This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Houthi rebels in Yemen are vowing to send more missiles to Saudi Arabia unless the Saudi-led coalition halts its bombing campaign. Abdel Qudus al-Shahari of the Ansar Allah group said the missiles were a clear message that we are resilient no matter the pressures the enemy places on us. Saudi officials said they shot down the missiles fired at the capital Riyadh and three other cities around midnight Sunday, although one person was killed by falling debris. The Saudis accused the Houthis of using Iranian-made missiles. Saudi coalition spokesman Brigadier Turki al-Maliki called the missile threat dangerous for regional and international security. Foundation for the Defense of Democracies analyst Benem Ben Talablu said there's little doubt Iran is providing the missiles despite Tehran's denials.
Iran is giving the Houthis enough to sustain the conflict and bleed Saudi Arabia, but not enough to do decisive battlefield changes. And because of that, the U.S. is getting sucked in, Riyadh is getting sucked in further and further, and the humanitarian crisis is escalating. So if there's anyone being the arsonist here for the fire, it's definitely Iran.
The missile attack came on the eve of the third anniversary of the Yemen conflict. Sierra Leone's delayed presidential election runoff has now been rescheduled for Sunday. Julius Maada Bio is the opposition challenger.
We have to work a few technicalities, really, that is between us and the APC. They still have a few concerns, and we have agreed to address those. But nothing should stop us from having an election on the 31st.
Bio faces off against ruling party candidate and former foreign minister Samora Camara. Charges of electoral fraud surrounding the first round led to a court injunction which was lifted Monday. This is VOA News. The U.S. has announced it would expel 60 Russian diplomats joining other governments in punishing the Kremlin for a nerve agent attack on a former Russian double agent in Britain that London blamed on Moscow. It's a charge Russia has denied. Rod Shah is a White House spokesman.
We want to have a cooperative relationship. The president wants to work with Russia, but their actions sometimes don't allow that to happen. The poisoning in the U.K. that has kind of led to today's announcement was a very brazen action. It was a reckless action. It endangered not just two individuals who were poisoned, but many civilians, many innocent civilians.
In all, 18 countries kicked out some 100 Russians. Russia's foreign ministry called the expulsions provocative and promised a response. Russia analyst Stephen Fortescue, honorary associate professor at the University of New South Wales, called it a serious development.
In a sense, it's symbolic, but probably has some practical significance as well. If the attention or those people being thrown out are, as everybody stresses, intelligence officers undercover, I presume it will have some severe operational significance.
The double agent Sergei Skripal and his daughter remain in critical condition following the March 4 attack. Investigators tried to determine what went wrong at a Siberian shopping mall fire Sunday, said a public address system had been turned off before the blaze broke out, killing at least 64 people. Witnesses said fire alarms were silent, many doors locked. Former South African President Jacob Zuma has been ordered to report to a Durban courtroom April 6th to face corruption charges involving a multi-billion dollar arms deal. The National Prosecuting Authority said it wants to charge Mr. Zuma with 16 counts, including fraud, racketeering, corruption, and money laundering. A senior North Korean official has called for an end to the U.S.-led international sanctions campaign against his government. Ri Jong-hyuk, member of the Supreme People's Assembly, speaking in Geneva, said inter-Korean dialogue is the trend of the times. It's time to put an end to the, what he called, anachronistic, anti-North Korean hostile and futile policy of sanctions and pressure. Police in Kosovo used tear gas to disperse hundreds of Serb nationalists in Mitrovica, trying to disrupt a meeting on improving relations with Belgrade. Kosovo, once part of Serbia before the Albanian majority nation declared independence, is trying to complete conditions necessary for European Union membership. A Brazilian appeals court has rejected objections by lawyers representing former President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva over his corruption conviction. It means he could begin serving a 12-year prison term. Wall Street rallied Monday as concerns over a global trade war eased on reports the U.S. and China are preparing to negotiate their differences, the benchmark Dow Jones soaring nearly 670 points. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbote in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 27th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sierra Leone Supreme Court postpones today's presidential runoff election to this Saturday, March 31st.
A rallying call again from the commission to all of its workforce to ensure that by tomorrow we are able to go back on the road, deploying our materials to ensure that by Saturday we are able to do all what we are supposed to do.
Albo Masekwa is spokesman for the National Electoral Commission of Sierra Leone. The main opposition, SLPP, says it will now recognize President Ernest Bai Koroma beginning today, Tuesday. Egyptians began voting Monday in presidential election in the first of 3 days of voting. And Miguna Miguna returned to Kenya yesterday from exile, but the police were waiting.
They want to remove me here by force and put me in a plane. Purportedly that I am an undocumented person. They want to take me to Dubai. Well, they would have to kill me first. I am a Kenyan. I'm not traveling with a Canadian passport.
Miguna Miguna is the self-declared leader of the National Resistance Movement of Kenya. Developing economies are urged to invest heavily in digitalization of skills training, and Southern Africa is projected to have low yield of maize this year. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The National Electoral Commission of Sierra Leone says the presidential runoff election that was scheduled for today, Tuesday, was postponed to this Saturday, March 31st. The commission's statement came after Sierra Leone's Supreme Court dismissed an injunction imposed over the weekend by a lower court preventing the organizing of the presidential runoff election between former Foreign Minister Samora Camara from the ruling All People's Congress Party and former military leader, retired Brigadier Julius Mada Bio of the main opposition Sierra Leone People's Party, SLPP. Electoral Commission spokesman Albert Masekwai tells viewers Peter Clotty that the commission will continue to engage the political parties and their representatives to address their concerns during the run-up to Saturday's vote.
The High Court judge vacated the injunction regarding the holding of presidential runoff, which was slated for the 27th of March 2018. The commission met and political parties were invited to another set of meetings, and the commission instructed its legal retainers to file in for an extension of the date. Because after the High Court vacated the injunction, the commission had less than 14 hours for the conduct of the elections. And practically, it is not possible for the commission to do all its directly work to ensure that polls are opened at 7 tomorrow.
Have all these political parties agreed to the 31st March presidential election runoff? And wouldn't this create a constitutional problem for the country?
While the NEC lawyers were at the Supreme Court, the commission was also meeting with not only the two political parties contesting, but including the presidential candidates, for them to understand the logistical challenges that the commission would have in conducting the process in less than 14 hours after the High Court has vacated the injunction. The Supreme Court is the constitutional authority that has the power to interpret constitutional issues. And taking into consideration that the commission wants to avert any potential constitutional crisis, and the Supreme Court is the authoritative body that has that mandate to look into such matters and grant what the commission has prayed for.
So will the commission now have the ample time to be able to organize this election on March 31st as you proposed?
Yes, indeed. Especially when since last week, the commission was on the preparatory arrangement. But unfortunately, because of the injunction, it had to stop all arrangements, including the deployment of materials and training and deployment of staff. Now it is a rallying call again from the commission to all of its workforce to ensure that by tomorrow we are able to go back on the road, deploying our materials to ensure that by Saturday we are able to do all what we are supposed to do. And that is what the commission is doing now.
Albert, what new measures will the Electoral Commission be implementing this time, looking at the short window you have to ensure that the improved measures you are implementing will ensure transparency and meet the standards that the Electoral Commission has set to ensure transparency, credibility of this election?
The commission has always been open to the two political parties with their concerns. And the commission has held a series of meetings with this political party. It's not only them, they are ICT technicians to ensure that we go through the process, they are able to understand what the commission is offering them regarding procedures. The commission has assured the political parties, the presidential candidates, that it will do everything in its power to ensure that we are able to manage or address some of these challenges that come up.
Albert Masekwa is the spokesman for Sierra Leone's National Electoral Commission. He was speaking with reporter Peter Clotte from the capital of Freetown. The Sierra Leone People's Party, SLPP, says it will not recognize President Ernest Bai Koroma as the country's leader beginning today, Tuesday. This after the Supreme Court granted the National Electoral Commission an extension to organize the presidential runoff election on Saturday, March 31st, instead of the originally scheduled March 27 date. The SLPP says President Koroma is to blame for the injunction. The party described the injunction as a ploy to maintain President Koroma in power. SLPP spokesman Lahai Lawrence Lima tells viewers Peter Clotte that the lower court erred when it issued the injunction over the weekend.
In the first place, we believe that the injunction itself ought not to have been granted by the court. And dismissing or vacating that injunction today is a clear indication that the judge himself have come to realization that he hasn't got the jurisdiction to have actually order such injunction. However, the Sierra Leone People's Party still stands on its grounds, but as I speak to you now, mediation is still going on with our international community, especially those who are here as observers as well. They are now playing the mediation role. We believe that elections are supposed to be held on the 27th, Tuesday, and if that does not take place tomorrow, where a new president will be elected, the legitimacy of President Koroma after 27th of March will not be recognized by the Sierra Leone People's Party.
But what is the significance of the SLPP not recognizing the legitimacy of President Koroma or not?
The significance here is that nobody holds office by assumption or you hold office by your convenience. You hold office by law. The law has to provide that you should be able to occupy office. And Section 46 has said of the 1991 Constitution is saying that nobody holds office for more than 5 years or for two terms, whether the 5 year terms are consecutive or not. You hold office for a specified period as provided for by the Constitution. And if that mandate provided for by the Constitution has expired, then you shouldn't be there. And if the president is using state institutions like the court and also using personnel officials of the court who do not have jurisdiction over certain matters and then presiding over that matters, then you begin to see how much this president and his APC government have employed people in certain state institutions to be able to seek his interest.
Are you therefore saying that the decision of the SLPP basically is in recognition of a potential constitutional crisis if the Electoral Commission is unable to administer the elections on March 27, that is Tuesday, as the commission has already stated previously?
Yes, very obvious. It's actually having the potential of constitutional crisis, and we actually do not want to go that path. And we know when a country is under constitutional crisis, what are the implications? And that is why we have been urging that the government need to step up, or the president needs to step up and ensure that the commission, which has an independent and constitutional mandate, do its work. What is also now bad is the fact that there has been no official communication to the public as to what happens tomorrow. So we would also urge the electoral commissions to come to the public and explain to the public what is happening now, whether the public is expecting the elections tomorrow or not, and what justification would be there for the public to actually rely on when elections will be conducted.
Lahai Lawrence Lima is the National Publicity Secretary of the Sierra Leone People's Party. He was speaking with viewers Peter Clotte from the capital, Freetown. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Botte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, March 27th. Daybreak Africa time is now 14 and a half minutes past the hour. Egyptians cast their ballots on Monday on the first of 3 days of voting in what appears to be a certain victory for incumbent President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi. Supporters of the president applauded, while some opponents cried foul, and still others appear to be disinterested in the outcome, one way or the other. Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Yeah. Supporters of President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi held an impromptu rally for their candidate in Cairo's Tahrir Square as voting got underway Monday at polling stations across the capital and Egypt's 14 provinces. Security was tight as police and military forces stood guard at key government buildings and installations. Officers wore their dress uniforms as they kept watch over voters arriving at polling stations. Army helicopters overflew parts of the capital. One middle-aged voter traded banter with polling workers as he dipped his finger in the indelible ink container after slipping his vote into a plastic ballot box at a school in the Giza district of Do'i. Elsewhere, Egyptian TV showed a smiling President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi shaking hands with electoral workers as he cast his ballot in the Cairo district of Heliopolis. A large crowd of villagers gathered outside a polling station in the province of Dakhaliya as women ululated from time to time to applaud those who were going in to vote. A voter named Ashraf told VOA that despite some misgivings, he was optimistic the situation in Egypt was heading in the right direction.
This is a transition period and it's not guaranteed to be the maximum, our hopes. Hopefully by the end of the second term of the president, we will be ready for the next step.
Al Jazeera TV, which supports the Muslim Brotherhood group now outlawed in Egypt, reported the group had urged its supporters to abstain from voting. Several secular parties also recently called on their supporters not to vote as well. The secular Al-Ghad party, whose leader Musa Mustafa Musa is the only candidate to oppose President Sisi in the current election, told supporters that he did not care who won so long as everyone turned out to vote. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
The self-proclaimed leader of the National Resistance Movement of Kenya returned to Kenya on Monday as promised after 6 weeks in exile. In January this year, Miguna Miguna administered the oath of office to opposition leader Raila Odinga as the people's president and was later deported to Canada by the Kenyan government as a consequence. At the time of his deportation, the authorities had seized and destroyed his Kenyan passport. On arrival yesterday at the Jomo Kenyatta International Airport, the authorities denied Miguna entry. An Interior Ministry spokesman said Miguna was denied entry because he failed to present to immigration authorities the passport he traveled with. There was a scuffle as the police tried to force Miguna back onto the airplane.
I'm not going. I can't go to Dubai. Do what? The captain has legal obligations. There is no way the captain can take me to Dubai by force. There's no way. And I've said no. I am not going to Dubai. I'm not going to Dubai. I'm not going to Dubai. Look at how they have torn my clothes. Yeah, they have torn my clothes. You know, I'm a lawyer. I have court orders telling them that they must process and facilitate my return.
Well, they want to remove me here by force and put me in a plane, purportedly that I am an undocumented person. They want to take me to Dubai. So I'm not going. I've refused to go.
Very good.
They say they now want to remove me by force. Well, they would have to kill me first. I am a Kenyan. I'm not traveling with a Canadian passport. I'm more authentic in this country than Uhuru Kenyatta, so I'm not getting a visa. And I have a court order that says that whatever they did is null and void.
That was Miguna Miguna, the self-proclaimed leader of the National Resistance Movement of Kenya. Kenyan authorities were finally able to remove Miguna Miguna off the Dubai Airlines that brought him into the country. But as the night wore on, his whereabouts was not clear. One account said authorities were able to force him onto a Kenyan Airways flight to Mombasa. Duncan Kayemba is senior reporter for KTN News, Kenya's 24-hour television news channel. He said Miguna Miguna's arrival was characterized by drama.
Right now, there is a spectacle drama that is actually unfolding. Miguna had been whisked and taken to a Dubai-bound plane, but as we are speaking, there is a standoff inside the plane. Miguna has apparently refused to sit. He is a hostile passenger, and as such, already the plane is behind schedule by over an hour because it was delayed to have him deported back to Dubai. So as we do speak, that is the situation with Miguna throwing tantrums. He has refused to sit down, and therefore, as we do speak, James, it is another phase of drama at the Jomo Kenyatta International Airport.
Duncan, why isn't the Kenyan government allowing Miguna to disembark?
Well, the information that was came from the spokesperson of the Interior Ministry, they said that he had refused to hand in the document. They're saying that the passenger is undocumented. They're saying that upon arrival, Miguna refused to hand over the passport that he traveled with in order to allow him a clearance. Miguna, in an interview with my colleague, KTN News, Sophia Wanuna, he said he displayed his national identity card and said that he had traveled with an identity card and not a Canadian passport. And therefore, he said there was nothing that he could hand over to the authorities. And that is where the problem was, because the authorities say he is an undocumented passenger and therefore he cannot be processed to be given entry. Of course, the import of all these, they are saying that maybe what has informed him refusing to hand over the Canadian passport is that it would imply that he applies for a visa upon arrival, then he will have to enter the country as a tourist. And of course, that one has its own ramifications in that him coming, being cleared as a tourist, it means he's not a Kenyan, he cannot engage in active politics, he cannot do other activities. So he refused, he said he is a Kenyan and cannot apply a visa once landing. That appears to have been the crux of the matter, James.
I spoke with Miguna on Monday morning. He was making certain demands on the Kenyan government that his Kenyan passport, which he said the courts have ordered, should be available upon his arrival. Did the government make his Kenyan passport available?
The Kenyan court directive was explicit that since his other passport was damaged, was defaced, they had to make arrangements on how they will facilitate his entry back into the country, if possible, prepare another passport. According to Orengo, that did not happen.
Duncan Kayemba is a senior reporter for KTN News, Kenya's 24-hour television news channel. He was speaking with me from the capital, Nairobi. It could soon be cheaper to operate a factory of robots in the United States than employ manual labor in Africa. That's the stark conclusion of a report by a London-based research institute. Henry Richwell reports.
The rhythmic sounds of the factory floor. At this textile plant in Rwanda, hundreds of workers sit side by side at sewing machines, churning out clothes that will be sold in stores across the world. Outsourcing production by using cheap labor in the developing world has been a hallmark of the global economy for decades, but technology could be about to turn that on its head. Research from the Overseas Development Institute focused on the example of furniture manufacturing in Africa. Karishma Banga co-authored the report.
In the next 15 to 20 years, robots in the US are actually going to become much cheaper than Kenyan labor, particularly in the furniture manufacturing industry. So this means that around 2033, American companies will find it much more profitable to reshore production back, which means essentially get all the jobs and production back from the developing countries to the US. And that obviously, you know, can have very significantly negative effects for jobs in Africa.
As robots are getting cheaper, she says, people are getting more expensive.
So the cost of a robot or a cost of a 3D printer, they're declining at similar levels, around 6% annually. So, you know, that's a significant decline, whereas wages in developing countries are rising.
There's no doubting the challenges posed by automation to manual labor in developing countries, but some are fighting back. The Fun Kids furniture factory in Kenya breaks with the traditional mold of production. Automated saws cut perfect templates using computer-aided designs, overseen by skilled programmers and operators. The investment is paying off with rapid growth and expansion into Uganda and Rwanda. But Kenyan CEO Chiru Waweru Waithaka says she can't find the right employees.
We have machines that sit idle because we don't have skilled people. There's many people who need jobs. Yes, we agree. But if they have no skill, I'd love to employ you, but you need a skill. Otherwise, you cannot operate our machines. So we are urging all institutions, government, please, let's take this skills gap as a crisis.
That call is echoed by the ODI report authors, who urge African governments to use the current window of opportunity to build industrial capabilities and digital skills before the jobs crunch hits. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The UN Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, says Southern Africa is likely to have a lower yield of the region's staple crop, maize, this year due to erratic rains and the presence of the voracious fall armyworm. Sebastian Mofu has more from Johannesburg, where he is attending a week-long meeting organized by FAO and its Southern African Development Community.
On the sidelines of the week-long meeting organized by the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, FAO, and Southern African Development Community, SADC, to train the countries on new methods to deter food insecurity threats, Louis Hove, the head of FAO Resilient Team in Southern Africa, said the reduced yield of maize is largely thanks to dry spells and the fall armyworm.
We are definitely going to get less than what we got last year, but we also know that last year we had access to what we needed, and we are likely to have stocks that were carried over. So this workshop that we are having will also be part of that process of trying to measure what is the carryover stocks and what are the estimates for the coming season. Once we have those projected productions and also an understanding of what are the carryover stocks, we'll be able to say what is the food insecurity situation. But for your own information, this region, whether there's El Nino or not, has always had about 25 million people food insecure, and that is a problem already before we even talk about the lower production we are likely to face this year.
Panduleni Elaho, the Southern African Development Community Acting Senior Security Officer, explains why the region will have less yield than last year.
This is because of two reasons. We have late onset rainfall, and we also have the issue of fall armyworm that is still impacting our crop production. Therefore, we are seeing a below average production as compared to last year. We are on the lookout because it does not look bad, but neither is it promising. We might have a slight ditch in low production for our staple maize.
According to the FAO, the fall armyworm, which first emerged in the 2016-2017 planting season, has hit the entire Southern Africa region except in Mauritius and Lesotho. The week-long meeting in South Africa aims to equip the region with early warning mechanisms that continuously monitor the food situation and ensures that the region is not caught unawares. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Johannesburg.
And that's it for this Tuesday, March 27th edition of Daybreak Africa. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Reiki Shryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Dave Magnus, I'm James Barton in Washington saying, have a lovely day, Africa.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bubu music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat and dombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.